This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
The latest news and talk. Hot, fresh, and delivered when you want it. Power 98.7. Now we're talking.
It's 1933 on Power Business, and we are moving into our Africa segment every week. On a Monday, we cast our eyes to the rest of the continent, picking up, interesting places to discuss. This evening, we talk about Zimbabwe, the investment climates, but also, the state of the economy there. And joining us to have this conversation is Kipson Kundani. He's economist and executive director at CEO Africa Roundtable. Kipson, good evening. Thank you for your time.
Good evening. It's a pleasure to join you.
Thank you so much for being with us, Kipson, and also just helping us reflect on the Zim economy this evening. I'm keen to maybe start off by speaking about the one that's out in the news today or even over the last few weeks being heavily discussed. Let's talk about the ZiG, that's the new gold-backed currency there, and the hopes for this currency and whether you think it can work this time around.
Well, I think this is an interesting development in the economic history of our country. I think you might need to recall that Zimbabwe has been in a current crisis and exchange rate crisis perhaps for the past 3 decades. Mm-hmm. And in pursuit of a lasting solution to the currency fiasco, I think now we are in the phase where this Zim gold currency has been introduced, which is purportedly backed by gold reserves and also forex reserves. But not only that, its value is also linked to the price of gold, therefore bringing some semblance of hope in terms of its stability. But I would like to bring you to the attention of the fact that has been at the center of the erosion of the Zim currency. Mm. It has always been excessive money supply. So in my view, yes, it's an interesting time, but it doesn't matter the type of the currency at the end of the day. As long as we are not going to contain money supply growth, I think we might see ourselves also drifting into the chaos that we are trying to manage.
That is a bit of a pity there. And I'm wondering, that issue of money supply, of course, this is something that is monetary policy facing here at Kipson. Has the government not expressed any desires to pull back that supply because that's their prerogative?
Yes, yes. So you find that the new governor, whom we call the second John, Dr. Mshawan, committed that he is not going to allow fiscal accommodation because that has been the source of excessive money printing in this country. But we know that talk is cheap and the action is very tough. So we wait to see. What is needed in that regard is a strong political will so that we manage excessive money supply due to fiscal pressures. So we wait to see what then happens.
I also want to speak about sanctions here, because I know that's also been quite a big, issue within the Zimbabwean economy, where we are with sanctions, some of them being withdrawn, and some of them are also the latest sanctions on the president, Mnangagwa. What is happening in that environment for you, Kipson? What you're keen to see?
Well, I think sanctions in whatever form, size, color, they are not desirable. Yes, there have been a review of the sanctions. And most of the companies that were on the sanction list are no longer there, including some individuals. But I think you know for a fact that the president of the country is still on that revised sanctions list. And what it does, the president, in our view, is the number one CEO of the land, is the face of the land. So as long as he's sanctioned, I think there is an unwanted cloud that hangs above us. There's this lack of appeal due to a president that is sanctioned. So I think, yes, this has been a positive development, but I think as long as the president is on the sanctions, there's a contagious effect to the rest of the economy. And also, he becomes our biggest seller of the country or promoter of the country. So because he's on the sanctions list, there are some jurisdictions and some places that he cannot be. And there's also some areas where he cannot hold assets. So that alone also paints a gloomy picture on the well-being of the country. So I think that would be my honest view of this sanction.
We do have Reg Ngosi, who is economist and director at First Source Money, joining us in this conversation. Reg, thank you so much for being with us this evening. Kibson and I have just been reflecting on the new ZiG, the Zimbabwe gold currency, and also on the sanctions there that still hang over the president, President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Keen to get your thoughts on those.
Yeah, firstly, let me start. Thanks for having me. Let me start with the sanctions. I certainly do agree with my panelists there that whatever nature of sanctions in any country or any to a person is quite frankly not good enough, not what we expect to happen to anyone, and that stifles, quite frankly, economic activity. And the Zimbabwean president is the chief spokesperson of the country. And, you know, is the chief for everything, the chief worker and stuff like that. It's supposed to be all over the world, perhaps drumming up investment and so on and so forth, international relations. He is the chief person there. Therefore, sanctioning him doesn't augur well for the economy and indeed for the people of Zimbabwe. So we should, in fact, distance ourselves as much as possible from any sanction that a country may have or may be imposed with. So Zimbabwe, quite frankly, should get out of those sanctions, and where possible, negotiations should start so that we can have a country that just performs as it should be performing, not constrained by some extra terrestrial powers like the U.S. and so on, you know, powers that are out there, you know, the world over, or heavenly powers constraining Zimbabwe's performance. Frankly, we should object to that. In regard to the new currency, the ZiG, they call it. Firstly, this is a temporary measure, in my view. I don't think, in the long term, this is sustainable. Firstly, the Zimbabwe Reserve Bank has got about 2.6 metric tons of gold in the reserve. All right. Now, when you back your currency with gold or with any commodity for that matter, what that means is that the issuance of your money is tied to the reserve that you have in your vault. So 2.6, say three metric tons of gold is quite frankly small for the economy of Zimbabwe to sustain that economy for a long time. I think this is a temporary measure. It may help, you know, the country in terms of saying, well, the currency is backed up by gold, but over a long term, it's very unsustainable. Remember, we had the gold standard a while back. One of the reasons why that thing fell apart was because it was stifling production. Okay? Economic activity is normally stifled, and you cannot have a country backed up by any commodity. That's old-fashioned way of managing economies. However, for Zimbabwe purposes, because it has had a very, very poor record of managing its own economy, therefore this measure may help it in the short, very short term. And again, remember, because gold is valued in dollars, is priced in dollars, Zimbabwe doesn't have sufficient money to buy this gold, even if it were to produce that gold itself. You have to buy it on market rates, and the markets price this one in dollars. Therefore, they have to pay in dollars, unless there were some gold. Some government companies producing this gold in Zimbabwe, perhaps. But even then, you know, it's going to be very expensive, I think. So it is a non-sustainable move, but for the time being, it may assist the Zimbabweans.
Thank you for that one, Rage, and just bringing us up to speed with your thoughts. I'm also then keen, I think you touched on gold. So let's continue to speak about Zimbabwe's mining boom. Kipson, keen to get your thoughts here. We do know that, for instance, Zim has a lithium boom here, a lot under the ground there. The world can use it for this green world that we're trying to create here. How's that going? And I think the most important one here is keen to get your thoughts in mines owned by the Chinese and how that might impact the ability for Zimbabwe to meaningfully benefit from those lithium reserves.
Yes, so there is indeed a lot of mining that is happening, lithium being one of it, and the Chinese being dominant in that sector. But I think the agony of Zim is that most of those minerals that are just finding their way in borders. And I strongly feel that as a country, we are losing out in terms of revenue because of the porousness of our borders and the lack of transparency thereof in generally the mining industry in Zim. But maybe also to comment on an argument that has been pushed forward by my co-panelist here, you discover that Zim is pretty much dollarized. The ZIG that we are talking about account for less than 15% of the total transactions that happen in the Zim economy. And that is plus or minus 80 million US dollars. So with the 3 tons of gold in reserves, it's a very great starting point because that gives us plus or minus 150 million in terms of the currency quantum that we can print as of today. And I think there will be exponential growth in these gold reserves and also economic activity that then should be oiled by that particular currency. I strongly feel that the biggest elephant in the room is always the failure by the central government to live within its means, thereby printing excess of this money supply. But coming back to the essence of mining, I think if you look at our 5 major export commodities, 4 of them are minerals, meaning to say mining has become kind of the export mainstay of the Zimbabwean economy. But our borders are porous. There's little downstream benefit that is happening in the country because of the discoveries of lithium. All of it in raw form is finding its way out of the borders of Zimbabwe. And I don't think that's a yacht scenario to celebrate about.
Thank you for that one, Kipson. Rage, keen to get your thoughts on some of the remarks made by Kipson and also on the mining potential of Zimbabwe and ensuring that they can reach the absolute potential.
Well, yeah, firstly, generally speaking, if a country has wealth as in form of minerals like Zimbabwe has, you expect a lot of prosperity flowing from it. If it is managing its economy well, if it's managing its resources well. But history has it for most of the African countries that they've not been able to manage their resources well. The way they contract themselves with mining companies is quite pitiful, to the extent that you expect nearly 80% of all the wealth that is being extracted from there going outside the country. The economy benefiting very, very little. You cannot tax your way to growth by taxing these mining companies and a few royalties that may come from there. That, frankly, is not acceptable. But I think the manner in which we as Africans have been engaging these foreign companies is, frankly, not acceptable. I'll give an example of Singapore went at some, not really minerals, it was the state-owned enterprises. Each time there is an investment in the country of Singapore, 50% of that investment had to be, 50% had to be state, 50% had to be the foreign. And over time, that could grow up. But in this country, in our countries in Africa, this is not the case. In Europe, I mean, even today as we speak, some countries there do have oil, when they produce there, a great chunk of that oil goes to the state itself instead of to the mining or to the extracting firm. So while Zimbabwe certainly is going to benefit from the lithium and so on and so forth, but that the benefit, in my view, is not going to be very sustained, is not going to be very great, as would have been the case had we been contracting appropriately. Nonetheless, we do expect some, you know, some growth coming out of there and Zimbabwe flourishing, hopefully. And but again, assuming there isn't much corruption, then good for Zimbabwe. All right. You did mention also, my colleague did mention about the money supply issue being the devil that has been, you know, bedeviling or rather hitting Zimbabwe for quite a while. I may disagree slightly. While obviously money supply is the issue, the fall of the dollar or the economy of Zimbabwe that, you know, jumped itself into the hyperinflation at some point not long ago, it wasn't because of money printing or money supply, as people call it. It was the failure of the productive sector of Zimbabwe. Sorry, can you hear me?
Yes, can hear you fine, Rich.
All right. Yeah, it was because of the failure of the productive sector of the economy. And so because of that collapse of the supply side of the economy, I'm not talking about money supply, I'm talking of the economy as a whole. Mm-hmm. In other words, for example, agriculture fell. The moment agriculture fails, means the goods are going to be very, very expensive. And therefore, the prices are going to go up. And it turns out to be hyperinflation the moment the goods and inflation is over 50%. So it wasn't necessarily the money supply that collapsed the economy. It was the failure of the productive sector, mostly the supply part of the economy, not money supply. But anyhow, moving away from there, we like I said, with the ZIG, we expect it to assist Zimbabwe temporarily, not forever, because this is not the way economies are going to manage over, can be managed over in these modern times. It's quite difficult, but nonetheless, quite helpful for Zimbabwe. Right. Yeah, I would perhaps stop there for the time being.
Thank you for all that, one. Reg, Kipson, any rebuttal there, or we can move on to our next one, which is really around the diaspora there.
Sorry, I missed you.
We can proceed.
We can proceed. I'd like to actually speak about the issue of, you know, the Zimbabwe diaspora there, and they hold a very strong desire to engage and contribute to the economy as well as social development within Zimbabwe. But of course, there's limitations to having left the country and how much that is possible. Kipson, let's talk about that, you know, and making use of the diaspora, which of course spread out throughout the world, highly educated and mostly emerging middle class where they are, how that can be leveraged for the economic prosperity of Zimbabwe.
Thank you. So the diaspora has been contributing significantly to the Zim economy, but in the form of diaspora remittances. Mm. While the argument of this country again is that there is the absence of a much needed social contract where our diasporians have got a sense of belonging to them, and they feel like obliged to contribute to the economic well-being of this country. It has always been a question of them and us, and there's a very strong sense of division. More importantly, I think Zim has not also crafted a vehicle that allow diasporans to invest back home. If you look at other countries that have got a very big diaspora, countries like Nigeria and so forth, you find that they've got this very strong bond market that is targets the diasporans, and they can easily raise capital for major infrastructural projects by raising bonds that are targeting their diasporans to do so. Ethiopia is another classical example that is managing to do that very well. That is not the same story for Zimbabwe. I have traveled around the world, and I've engaged diasporans, Zim diasporans in Europe, in America, and so forth. I think because of the circumstances that led them to leave their country, they have this deep sense or feeling to say things won't work in Zim. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of campaigning, image building, and appeal and consistent well-being of the economy that needs to manifest for us to appeal in economic sense to our diaspora.
Thank you for that, Kipson. Rich, we'll come to you in a bit. We do have Pedro from Montana on the line who would like to engage us this evening, specifically on the minerals boom in Africa and benefiting from it. Pedro, good evening to you. Thank you for your time. Please go ahead.
Good evening. Thank you so much, and thank you for the discussion. I'm asking myself that we seem to have been so good in analyzing the defects of our economies and our behavior. When are we going to get deep analysis and analytics for solutions? Just like what has been mentioned, the minerals are getting out through the porous borders. How do we resolve that? And how do we make sure that Africa really become like Singapore or any other European country in terms of benefiting from the rich wealth of minerals? When are we going to be able to do that?
Thank you for that, Pedro. I think we'll certainly put that question also to our panelists. Reg, you know, keen to get your thoughts here on the issue of the diaspora, but also responding to Pedro about solutioning at some point and maybe not over diagnosing the issues.
Yeah, well, Pedro is quite correct. I think what we should be migrating as countries is towards solving our challenges that have been very, very perennial year after year, year after year. Well, it just doesn't talk to Zimbabwe alone. It talks to many African countries, essentially, or developing countries particularly. The challenge has been the following, and I think the answer, therefore, would be about reversing this challenge. The challenge has been most economies, including South Africa, assume that they do not have money. Therefore, they have to go and borrow at all times. So you find that when they go out and borrow, it's like Mashonisa thing. When you're in the business of borrowing and borrowing at all times, the likelihood of you to get out of that habit runs very low to the extent that you continue to borrow at all times. Countries in Africa, including Zimbabwe, have to have the capacity, like any other economy, to issue their own money. All right, and issue their own money into the productive sectors of the economy. All right? However, Africans have been fooled into thinking that when you issue your own money, there's going to be inflation. And they call it money printing. And if you print money, therefore you devalue your currency and so on. Those are wrong thoughts which come from some theories in economics which are discarded quite a while back. Much of Asia, much of Europe, the current Asia that is highly developed as we speak now, which was developing, used their own private issuing capacity, money issuing capacity, to develop themselves. In other words, you have commercial banks which are owned by the state, because if you have commercial banks that are not owned by the state and mostly foreign, they vacuum money away. All right. Even if it were to be owned by locals, it becomes a private issue. Money, by its very nature, is a privilege of state. State itself can issue. Here, let me give you an example. If the government of Africa is to issue money, it issues money. It sends that money to DTI, and we know what DTI does. It has IDC and all these, and IDC goes and gives this money to industrialists. And they begin to produce stuff to farmers and so on and so forth. Sends it to students, schools with students up and so on. That productive use of the economy of money does not generate inflation at all. Instead of doing that, we go and borrow. We go to IMF and all these other places and borrow, and money gets vacuumed out as a consequence. Zimbabwe should go that route as well. With the introduction of the ZIG, quite quickly, they should be able to get into the productive part of the economy and help themselves, including obviously beneficiating. There should be a way in which they can get out of that through the way of issuing currency from their own central bank. Now, let's get to the diaspora. So quite a number of Zimbabweans all over the world. Obviously, SADC has got the largest number of them. These fellows would have been very useful back home. And as the colleague speaks here, the remittances that go to Zimbabwe, they are probably, you know, used in a manner that is not as productive as it should be the case. And of course, they don't have so many. The Zimbabwe, you know, economy is not so sophisticated. And the instruments he was talking about, like bonds and so on, they may be there, but perhaps people are not even very familiar about them. The government should have been promoting some of those vehicles for investment and thus getting the economy to produce. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Nonetheless, this person should perhaps, in my view, be going back home. All right? You know, many of them are fairly schooled, all right, you know, with junior degrees. They have to go back, convince the government to say, look, let's begin to do this, to do this way, that way, and so on and so forth. However, it seems to me they're not very much keen to go back to Zimbabwe because they think the economy won't be turned around. But who is going to turn the economy around if not them? So the diaspora, frankly, has to change its attitude as well, as much as the Zimbabwe government itself has to change the attitude towards its diaspora. That's my view.
Unfortunately, it's all we have time for this evening. I'd like to thank you both for this conversation. I think it's been robust and also really highlighting the complexities of building an economy and also rebuilding one there. Thank you both for your time and insights this evening.
Thanks.
Wonderful. That was Reg Nkosi, who's economist as well as director at First Source Money, and Kipson Gundani, who's executive director at the CEO Africa Roundtable and economist.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.